Guys!
Don't tell me that.
Yeah.
George, you were cautious.
Whose sneaker is it? It's Betty Ripsom's.
What if she's still here?
Eddie, come on!
My mom will have an aneurysm, okay? If she finds out that we're playing down here, I'm serious. Bill?
If I was Betty Ripsom, I would want us to find her.
Georgie, too.
What if I don't want to find them? I mean, no offense, Bill, but I don't want to end up like... I don't want to go missing either.
Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider Podcast, a weekly movie and TV podcast available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're going to dive deep into the sewer and see if we can all float as we discuss our reactions to Stephen King's It. Be sure to get the Hole in the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, where reviews are appreciated. Please leave a review if you have not. We're also on Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
What's going on, Aaron? I am feeling spicy tonight.
That's because you just had Taco Bell.
I did just have Taco Bell. It was delicious.
Oh, let's not go there. And if you're looking for John Davenport, he will not be here. He is dealing with some Irma situations, so he will not be here this week. But filling in for him is Amanda Sink.
Hey, guys. I'm excited to be here again.
You've been on many Remake This Movie Rights as well.
Yep, sure
Irma have. God, it's Amanda.
Your dad jokes are ridiculous. And what does Taco Bell do to you?
And John is fine, by the way. If anybody's asking, he's fine.
He survived Irmageddon.
Oh, boy. Is that a thing?
That's like it
a
is. Hashtag it's Irmageddon? A hashtag.
Hashtag Irmageddon.
Well, we, Scott and I both have, and Amanda too, we all have a lot of friends in Florida and also in Houston, Texas area. So our thoughts go out to everybody. Now we're going to get back to the regular show. You guys ready?
Yes.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Scott's in a weird mood. I'm just really letting you weird. Know. We're all happy about it because we like spicy Scott.
Spicy.
Okay, so let's mention a couple tidbits and opening weekend records for Stephen King's It before we get into everything. Yeah, $123 million weekend, biggest opening for a horror movie in history, second biggest rated R opening after Deadpool, and more than doubled the biggest September opening ever.
Wow.
That's phenomenal.
They were going to see any more Stephen King movies?
What's it? Yeah. They might even actually re-release The Dark Tower, you know, and say, hey, it's a Stephen King movie. Yeah. So it's shocking. Absolutely shocking. And by the way, people that consider themselves a box office analyst probably should be out of a job because nobody called anything right this entire summer. I don't even know why that's still a thing, but whatever. Also, play our Fantasy Movie League. Go to fantasymovieleague.com, look for the Hollywood Outsider League, and join. The password is buy popcorn, one word.
There you and go. Also, don't forget to set up your lineup the week that it premieres, because if you do, you're going to end up in position number 22.
Yeah, that sucks.
And you're screwed for the whole season.
It sucks. The film's first teaser trailer generated 197 million views globally within 24 hours of that trailer's release. Also, fun fact, this film released 27 years after the miniseries first aired.
Which I think is perfect in terms of the story, which I'm sure we'll get into. Yes. But isn't that I know, so cool?
That's why I mentioned it.
I know. I'm just I'm telling you how fascinated I am by this.
Okay. Well, here's what It is about. Every 27 years in the small town, and there's going to be lots of spoilers here. So if you haven't seen It, we're going to give our quick thoughts real quick. And then after that, it's going to be total spoilers. So you're going to want to be ready to click the off button. Every 27 years in the small town of Derry, Maine, It feeds. Tragedy awakens it and death follows. Seven kids have stumbled onto its secret that it feeds on fear and can be defeated if they fight it together. As they each face their greatest fear as well as its favorite manifestation in Pennywise the Dancing Clown, this loser's club is the only chance the sleepy town of Derry, Maine may have to save lives. If they can't, they'll all float too. So, quick thoughts, no more than a couple sentences, and your score. Amanda, what'd you think of It?
I really enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I was a little disappointed that it wasn't scary for me, but I think I mentioned earlier that it's really hard to scare me in general, so I might not be the best person to determine if it's scary or not. It was definitely intense, and overall, I'd probably give it 750 out of 10.
Okay. And Scott?
This movie was pretty much exactly what I wanted it to be. Despite some pacing issues, it captured the essence of 80s movies in a way that I haven't experienced since Stranger Things, and was one of the most genuinely off-putting films in a good way that I've ever seen. If $10 was the full price of admission, I'd give it $8.
Yeah, well, you can move to 8 anytime you want, Amanda. Just
I know, I'm just thinking about it.
Or you can stand your ground, stand fast. Did you know the Duffer Brothers were originally trying to get this, and they were told no, Scott?
Who?
The Duffer Brothers. They do Stranger Things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep. My quick thought, surprisingly faithful adaptation of the book that managed to craft the first part of a two-part story, if you didn't know that, without making it feel like you were missing something, which is a really hard thing to do, and I think they did it really well. But it is more Stand By Me than it is Pet Sematary, but all entertaining. So if $10 full price permission, I give it $8.
I'm going to go 8. I'm changing.
Are you sure this time?
I'm sure.
You're kind of ruining the whole show right now.
I know. That's all right. I'll be a downer.
All right. Well, we're going to start this whole episode over. I'm just kidding.
We're already two hours in.
You people are like, when are you going to talk about it? All right. Well, now the spoilers are wide open. So if you haven't seen it, you're going to be spoiled about this movie. There's not much more I can do.
It has a clown.
Oh, my God. God. Did you even read the book, Scott?
I did not.
If not, what did you think of the story?
I really enjoyed the story. Well, I saw the TV adaptation a long time ago, but I remember very, very little of it. I mean, obviously, you remember Tim Curry. That's kind of like the standout thing that you remember from that movie. Mm-hmm. Or is it a TV show? What do you call it?
It's a miniseries.
TV movie? Miniseries? Okay. I like the basic premise. I'm not sure how I feel about the lack of explanation of who or what it is. You know, why is he a clown? Is it an alien? Is it just a mysterious, horrific monster? Was that ever explained in the book, or is it just kind of like a...
Yeah. It's totally explained in the book. I think they will explain it more in the second part. Do you want me to explain that, or...
No. Okay. I'm kind of okay with it. I'm actually considering reading the book, well, listening to the book between now and then, because it'll be another 3 years before we see that, right?
Oh, yeah. 2 or 3 years minimum, yeah.
So that'll give me plenty of time, because that is a big-ass book. That's a doorstop right there. Holy cow.
Over 1,100 pages, baby.
Yeah. That's cost me pages. 2 credits on Audible, probably. But I got 2 summers to get it going. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I like the whole idea of 27 years and how they're splitting it up. Because if I remember right, even on the miniseries, it was like a series of flashbacks, right? They kept going back and forth between when they were kids and when they were adults. They started out with the adults, and they were having these – Freaky memories of what happened to their kids, right?
In the miniseries, they did the kids first, and then they did the adults the second night.
Man, I'm totally misremembering that then. So they're kind of doing the same thing then.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, very, very similar. What do you think of that story, Amanda?
Well, I haven't read the book. I'm actually still working on a couple other Stephen King books right now. I'm working on The Dark Tower. After I saw the movie, I really wanted to see that. And then The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. But anyway, I was actually pretty impressed with how well it turned out. I did not think that it was going to be done as well as it turned out to be, just because the expectations were so low from all of the Stephen King readers. Everybody was kind of very, 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 very concerned for it. And so I'm glad that it worked out as well as it did. The story was really interesting to me, just like Scott said. That 27-year thing is fascinating, and I love that they put this movie out 27 years after the miniseries. Mm-hmm. So I really liked it. It was really interesting to me.
I hadn't read it until like a year or two ago. Actually, we did a Remake This Movie Right episode. You can go find it, RemakeThisMovieRight.com, on it. And Troy Heinrichs and Wayne Henderson, who did that episode with me, kept telling me all the weird stuff about the book. And they said, you got to read it. And I'm like, well, I mean, this sounds really just freaky. And so I had to read it. So I finally read it. And I read it. I didn't listen to it. You know, I just read the page. It's pretty cool. Like flip pages. And it's a great book. I absolutely love the story. It's a fascinating story. I like how the movie and the story is working. The book itself is really like a junk drawer of horror tropes. I mean, it's basically like everything you've ever been scared of is tossed into this book. It's like Stephen King was sitting around going, I'm scared of this. I mean, it's got werewolves, got Dracula. It's got everything you've ever been afraid of in one book. It's a really interesting thing. And it's totally like he's just throwing everything but the sink at the wall. He's just throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. And most of it sticks. Now, there is one particular portion of it that I wanted to talk about that's not in the movie, Thank the Heavenly Lord. And that is, and you'll probably hear a lot of people talking about it, so the reason I want to mention it is in the story, in the book, you guys know when they get lost, when they get down in the tunnel and they fight Pennywise?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can't get out because they've lost their way, right? They're in the tunnels and the sewers in the book, and they don't know how to get out of there. They've all forgotten.
Now, is this before or after they've taken care of Pennywise?
I'm trying to remember. It was like a year and a half ago, but I think it was right after Pennywise. They were trying to get – yeah, it was afterward because they were trying to get out of the sewer.
Okay.
And so they can't get their thoughts together. So Bev has a great idea. She decides she's going to have sex with every one of the boys because that's going to bring their minds back to completion.
What, they got baby batter on their brain and they need to
– It's the weirdest – thing I've ever read, and I mean ever, in a book. And I get what King was going for. King was very much trying to, you know, the whole book is really about your movement from childhood into adulthood and how kids think they're prepared for adulthood long before they are, and facing your fears and how your fears will stay with you for life. That's really what the book is. It's really a big analogy for childhood to adulthood. And he's trying to do something unique there, but it's weird as hell. And to have Bev have sex with every boy was just weird. And it's not good weird. It's just weird.
It's child porn weird, but like text.
I mean, in this day and age, probably, you know, this came out in 86. It was a different era. People weren't as ridiculous as they are now. They're not uber sensitive and everything. So I don't think that he was going for
child porn. He was intending for that.
No, he was trying to connect childhood to adulthood. I mean, I got what he was going for. It just didn't work for me and obviously didn't work for them. And thank God it's not in the movie. But I'm explaining what that was because a lot of people have been talking about it, but they don't know what that scene is. That's what that scene is about. Bev has sex with everybody. They remember how to get out of there and they get out and they escape. So it connects them. It bonds them for life. And later on, she doesn't even remember it and it comes back to her and it's just weird. But apparently they're leaving it out of the movie. So what did you think of, go back to the movie, I just wanted to explain it real quick. What did you think of the Losers Club and their performances?
I was so impressed with the cast of the Losers Club. The character of Eddie was one of my favorites just because he's so uptight.
Eddie was your favorite? Like the germphobe?
Yes.
Really?
He was so uptight about everything, but then he would like start swearing and just the shit that came out of his mouth really surprised me.
He was very convincing. Like he acted like a young adult more than he did a child. Like to me, he was one of those ones that made it like an epitome of the 80s kind of thing. Cause this is just what you expected out of kids from the 80s. It's just this foul mouth attitude. I loved Eddie too. He wasn't my favorite, but he was good.
I mean, I really liked Richie and Bev obviously too, but
Richie got every great line.
He did get some great lines. Yeah, it was just Eddie that
go blow your dad, you mullet wearing asshole. I freaking love that. I almost cried.
Oh, there were so many lines in that movie that had me slapping my knee. I'm a knee slapper.
I really like Jeremy Ray Taylor as Ben as well. He was just a likable kid. I feel like he was the one that a lot of people related to. The whole joke with him, is this in the book or not, about him loving New Kids on the Block?
No, because actually in the book, it's like late 50s, early 60s, and yeah.
So oh, okay.
It's different age, different years.
But is there something else that, I mean, there weren't boy bands in the 50s and 60s, so I guess, but.
The poster
on the back of the door where she sees it and she like just calmly like closes it back so nobody sees it. I loved that. That was great.
I was laughing so hard when she was talking to him and then he kept giving her lines from the song as she was walking away and he's like explaining it. He's like, it's a song. That one's also a song.
Or when they're fixing up in the alley, she's like, are you guys sure you got the right stuff?
So good.
That was great. And then just his look of like, please don't tell everybody I love New Kids on the Block. I thought that was great.
I was surprised by Finn Wolfhard. I think I said his name right, but he plays Richie and he's in Stranger Things. I didn't realize until probably 20 minutes into the movie that he was the kid from Stranger Things.
Oh, really?
No, seriously. Like I was kept trying to place him. And then I think I asked him, I don't remember, but it finally clicked. That's a kid from Stranger Things, but he's dropping F-bombs left and right and left and right. And I'm like, wow, he's totally different from that. He's a really good actor. That kid is a really good actor.
I liked him, but I liked him. I didn't like him as much as everybody else. Like, it sounds like a knock to say I liked him the least. out of all the others, but just every other kid. I don't write all the actors' names down, but
I've got them all. Who do you want to know?
The African-American kid. I thought he was really good when he would stare at the screen and stuff, but I didn't love him as much as
Chosen Jacobs, Mike Hanlon.
Chosen Jacobs. Yeah, he was. I mean, he was good, but I think he's the only one that I would put Eddie over is him, just because he got the best lines, mm-hmm. and he is a good actor, but I just felt more connected to the other characters.
I wasn't a big fan of Stan. I thought he was kind of
the nerdy kid.
Yeah, and I thought he was kind of trying to, like, I feel like he was dubbed in parts, like a couple spots. I'm like, what is this, Godzilla? It looks like a bad dubbing. That he's just been audio dubbed or something, but he went. I didn't think he was.
Yeah, he was kind of just okay.
He was just okay.
I've never. I've only seen an episode of Stranger Things.
You haven't seen the whole series?
Nope. Don't shoot me. So I had.
Yeah, I love the people. There was actually someone in my theater that, well, they obviously ripped off Stranger Things. I'm like, ripped it off.
Stranger Things ripped off.
Oh my God. This. Whatever, people.
Yeah. So I had no idea of the correlation. Like I said, I've only seen like an episode, so I forgot what all of the kids looked like. But they're impressive. They're really impressive for their age group. They mm-hmm. all played their characters really well. And from everything I've heard about Richie and like his diverse acting, it just makes me want to go watch the show just to see how good of an actor he is and the rest of the cast.
Well, he's only in like the first episode, so.
Oh, really?
No, he's in the whole series. He's in all 8 episodes. He's not Will.
He's not Will?
No. Finn Wolfhard is the main kid. Mike.
Oh, my bad. I got him mixed up. I thought he was Will.
No,
wrong. I got to go rewatch for the third time now.
I guess you got to watch it again. Can we talk about Sophia Lillis, though, who played
Bev? Oh, my
Bev?
God. She has star potential written all over her. She was fantastic. Every scene she was in, I was just like, this girl's going to be huge.
What was it about her? Because you, as soon as you left the movie, you were throwing her name. Like, you were just crazy about this girl. What about her?
I think a lot of it had to do with the 80s aesthetic. Like, she just pulled off. She has this look about her that looks the 80s. And I understand that she had a costume on and makeup and everything. But there's just something about her look that there's something familiar about her. Maybe it's just a personal thing that reminds me of someone from back when I was a kid in the 80s or something. But she just – but that coupled with, like, her performance when she was around her dad just was very – unnerving because you felt so uncomfortable, but she was solid as a rock the entire time and broken. And when she's in the bathtub scene and the whole place is covered in blood and she cannot understand why her father doesn't see what she's seeing, she can't put it all together. Absolutely believable. I just really liked her a lot.
The joke about her being Molly Ringwald was fantastic because that's exactly who I see her as. I see her that same just aura about her and her character, how she portrays her characters, how she acts, everything about her, how she looks. Mm-hmm. She literally looks like Molly.
Except she's not self-centered.
Right. She's well, I mean, Molly Ringwald wasn't always completely self-centered, I don't feel like.
But I didn't know her personally, so I can't say.
No, I mean the character.
I know. I was kidding.
No, but I think she's very reminiscent of that. And so that, like, everything about her is 80s. How she looks, how she acts, how she portrays everything. It's she could seriously just go in a John Hughes remake and it would be great.
No, don't say that because we don't need more John Hughes remakes. That'll start scaring people. Easy. What did you think? I'm kind of curious for you guys now that we're talking about the Losers Club and everybody has to face their fear. How did you guys feel? I mean, I read the book, so it's kind of like like, there's a lot of stuff that's not there. They changed some of the fears so that there was some shocking stuff for book readers, which is really cool. But I also feel like some of the details left out, like Scott, like you said, you didn't quite understand exactly what it was. And they do explain in the book, and I assume they will a lot more in the second movie. They left some of that stuff on the table. But did you understand everything that was going on and the fears made sense and all of that?
For the most part, I mean, the painting – The kid was afraid of the painting just in general, and each kid had their own little thing that they were afraid of, and he kind of tapped in on that. I got that, but just there was a lot of vagueness to it, which I'm hoping is gonna be explained more in the second, like you said.
But if there wasn't, would you still be okay? Like, did you get enough from this movie to be like, you know, I got the gist of it?
I got enough to be the gist, but you know me, man, I like things explained. Mm-hmm. I don't like things left to my imagination or mine, because I'm not as smart as normal writers. So I want them to tell me. But I mean, that's part of why I gave it an 8. Some of it was pacing. Some of it was explanation. I mean, sometimes you want a little bit more than just sheer creepiness for creepiness sake. Because I compare it to like I didn't take my wife to see this. And because number one, she hears R rating and she assumes it's going to be a lot of gore, which there was shockingly not a lot of gore in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Except for the and arm.
What's that?
Except that for the arm. That scene was fantastic.
Right. But I mean, it wasn't just a blood and guts slasher movie. You know what I mean?
No.
Because she hates those. And then I sat there thinking, I do this a lot when I go to movies without her. I go, is she going to like this? And I think that that's one thing that would turn off a person like her, is that there was just weird stuff just for the sake of being weird. You know, like there's no real explanation for it. It's just to make a interesting artistic shot that makes you feel awful. Now, that works for a person like me, because that's why I like to go see movies like this in the theater. Mm-hmm. But, you know, part of me was kind of like, man, I just wish that there was a little more context for that.
I think if it weren't for the book and readers having known what it is and talking about it prior to the film's release, that it would have hurt the movie, because the context wouldn't be there as deeply as it ended up being. Because you had everybody talking about the film prior and their experiences with it. But if this were just like a standalone film, it would really be missing those elements of needing to give a little bit more information of how, and especially not in like the last act. I felt like it didn't really explain things to you until it was towards the end, when you started to realize, oh, okay, that's why I've concluded. They've decided, they've told me, you know, a little bit more concretely that this is what's happening here. But for so long, it was so vague. Mm-hmm. And I had heard a lot of people talking about it, book readers, so I kind of went into it with a little bit of information. But I think if it were just the film, it would have had more of an impact, like negatively, because people would be taken so much more out of context. They would be trying to constantly figure out what's going on here. Why is this? And by the end of by the time you figure it out, it's kind of too late.
And I get that. And trust me, I didn't want anything else to pad this movie, because I already felt like it had some pacing issues. So there were a couple times I was looking at my watch, my proverbial watch. Mm-hmm. But I get that. At the same time, there's something fun about the mystery element to it, and leaving something to intrigue. And I don't need a 100% answer on everything. It's just there were some things that I kind of felt like, man, I need to go back and rewatch that and see if I get it now. Now, knowing what I know now.
Did you guys understand why Pennywise wasn't the sole thing that they had to fight? Like, why there were other manifestations of things? Did you guys understand that? Like, it is not Pennywise. Pennywise is just a representation of it. Did you guys understand that? Because some people didn't, and I'm kind of curious if you guys did.
I don't feel like
I mean, everybody had their own fear. Like, Ben had that, like, headless thing that was coming down the stairs at him. I can't remember which kid is which that was afraid of the painting.
That was Stan. Eddie's afraid of the leper. Mike was afraid of the parents in the burning building. Bev was afraid of her father. And then Bill was afraid of Joy G, I guess. And Pennywise.
Is everybody just afraid of Pennywise then?
Yeah.
Why is the connection of the clown?
It's actually its favorite manifestation, according to the book. But I think some people were kind of confused. Why isn't Pennywise there all the time? Well, it's not. Basically, it's whatever is going to scare the kids, because now in the book, I hate being like, well, the book says, but just to kind of clarify for people that might not realize that in the book, the reason why is because scared children are easier to talk into killing, mm-hmm. obviously, and also to the creature, to the monster, whatever you want to call it. It's like salt on meat. It's like it adds to the flavor. The fear, the terror of that kid makes it taste better. And that's part of that.
So to me, it felt like they really nailed down getting it across to you that they had to fight their fears and what their fears were. But I don't think they did an excellent job at giving you at least the clues and information. Not saying that they didn't at all, but just didn't do an excellent job at trying to get across to you that this is the manifestation of the evil. The evil is in all of these things. Mm-hmm. To me, for most of the movie, it felt like it was just, oh, they're just seeing it. like it, Pennywise, like Pennywise is just making you see your fears and that's how he's scaring you. Not that it was the fear. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. And I think they still incorporated it into the film, but I don't think they did an excellent job at doing that. They focused on what the fears were. And to me, it came across like it was intending to be more like Pennywise is it, but Pennywise can get you through your fears. Sort of like Freddy. Mm-hmm. To me, where he can get you through all of these different areas, but it's still that thing. You know what I mean?
Except there's a reality to it, because there was blood in that bathroom right. that they had to clean up. But if you're not afraid, you wouldn't see it.
Right. So it seemed like it was more just like, it seemed like it was more internal, like Pennywise could do these things and create the fears for you, but not really that Pennywise wasn't the total evil. Like Pennywise was just another fear.
Right.
And I don't think they really got that nailed across extremely well.
Hiya, Georgie. What a nice boat. Do you want it back?
Yes, please.
You look like a nice boy. Do you want a balloon too, Georgie?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Now we aren't strangers, are we?
I should get going now.
Oh. Without your bow? Here. Take it.
So speaking of, how about Pennywise? I mean, much has been talked about filling the shoes of Tim Curry, but many people never even saw that performance, honestly. How was Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise?
I liked him for the creepy factor, but I have a hard time believing that any kid wouldn't turn and run singing clown like that.
Thank you. Regardless
of their experience. I mean, that was one thing about Pennywise in the original miniseries is that he still looked kind of mildly friendly. And even in the scene with Georgie, when he's kind of laughing and joking, he still looks creepy as hell, man. There's just no way a kid's going to sit there on his knees and be like, yeah, hey, what's going on? I should get my boat. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, can we agree some kids deserve to die in movies? Like, seriously, I mean, you guys were 10, right? If you see a creepy clown in the drain and you're like, go ahead and stick your hand in there, you deserve to bite it.
So the thing with this, and I'm with you guys mostly, except for...
I feel like a fight's coming.
Because I'm getting serious. Georgie has...
Tell us about it.
Georgie has the look of startled fear on his face. He's not hanging out there because he feels like this is a friendly clown. He's hanging out there.
He's being brave.
Yeah, and he's trying... You can sense the fear on him. He realizes this is not a good situation. But he's being lured in by this little creepy, evil, demonic thing. And... I think it was more of like a paralyzing fear. Like, if I run, now it's behind me. Mm. And if I'm here, like, I'm already here. It's already sitting in front of me at this point. Like, what do? What are your options at that point?
And as a child, you run your ass off. That's what you do, Georgie, you dumbass.
Run backwards.
Yeah.
But I don't think
Move those arms you no longer have.
I don't think he was staying there out of pure ignorance to the situation. I think he understood what was happening and what could happen, but he's a child. What else can I do? They're not able to think about all of the other things outside of the box of, well, if I go this way or if I go that direction or if I do this and I do that, it's okay, well, I'm here and it's in front of me or what?
I get that. I get the candy in the van thing. All right. I get why kids would get in the van, but in a sewer? Come on, man. Like, that's run your ass off. That's the only solution. And there's nothing about his performance. This is where I think he differs from Tim Curry, is that he never seemed inviting to me. And he's supposed to seem inviting. He's supposed to get Georgie interested. Now, I think he does a little bit of that. And he doesn't. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's very scary, like, in his own way.
Take it.
Yeah, that inflection in his voice was great. But Tim Curry, I really felt like, man, all right, if he was in the sewer, I'd probably talk to him. Now, granted, I'm a big Tim Curry fan. That might be a factor. I don't know.
Well, I mean, just the idea of a clown being in the sewer, just like, isn't that not a red flag? Why is there a clown in the sewer? Exactly. Why is he not asking me to help him get out?
Like, is the circus really having that hard a time? Like,
but that's what I'm saying. At that point, he's already stuck in the paralyzing fear stage.
Yeah, I get you.
Look, Pennywise, I told you to get your mind out of the gutter, but come on.
Do you guys think that people in general could even really like Skarsgård more than they do Curry, even if he were better? Because I feel like
people were determined
that Curry could not be beaten. And I think a lot of that is attributed to that being the prime reason for enjoying the miniseries was Tim Curry's.
The obviously best thing about that miniseries.
The only redeeming thing. So I feel like because that was highlighted as so incredible in comparison to the rest of the shit that was happening, that a lot of people started to think that that was like the ultimate. And I don't think people left room for Skarsgård to even secede past.
No, I don't. Curry. I mean, I think a lot of people loved his performance. I think he was really good. Like, I don't have any real complaints about him. I have some complaints about the direction, like how they shot the character, where they relied a little too much on jumpy scares and quick movements as opposed to letting his performance play out. That's not on him, though. That's on the direction. But I do think Tim Curry, because it was a TV miniseries, he had to do more acting. Like, it was always in the moment. It was always about his performance. Where here, they used a lot of direction and production elements to emphasize his performance, which I think actually worked against it in a couple times.
And I understand that he's good, and he might even be great, but he's not very good.
He doesn't blink the whole movie, I don't think, and that was fantastic.
Right. My question and concern is, I don't really think that there was really ever a chance for Skarsgård to be better than Curry, because people have their minds made up that because of those same examples, Curry had to put in so much more work, and it was so fascinating, especially in comparison to the other elements in the miniseries, that it was already so high on the pedestal that there was a chance for Skarsgård to be great, but not to be better than Curry. Mm. And I think that's my concern with it is, did he even ever really have a chance to?
Well, did you ever see the It miniseries?
I've seen the clips of.
So,
of,
what do you think? Was Skarsgård great?
They're different. Like, kind of what
take,
you pointed
take out. Take Tim Curry out of it. Would you call Skarsgård's performance great?
I would consider it great.
Okay.
I in comparison to Curry, I don't know.
Here's the thing. I think stop comparing him to Curry. I mean, that would help. If you really want to take Curry out of it, stop comparing him to Curry. Just what do you think of Skarsgård in this movie? Because I agree. I don't think it's fair to him. He's playing it very different in many respects than Curry did.
Yeah, and I think he did. I think he did what his character should have. To me, I was really expecting, the only thing I really expected from this movie was for this damn clown to scare me. I have an intense fear of clowns because I was chased by a clown when I was a child out of, it was like a trail of screams, I think is what it was called. Local Rockford, you guys should know if that's what
haunted
it was.
House kind of thing.
It was an actual trail. You're outside. But yeah, and this dumbass clown with a pink little hat hair thing situation literally chased me all the way out as I was screaming and crying as a child.
That gets you stabbed in the city.
Yeah, my brother legitimately almost punched him in the face. So I have this insane fear of clowns in those legitimate settings. And so it's kind of manifested onto screen. And so I was expecting out of anything for this film for me to be scared at some point, like, oh God, it's coming after this child, just like it came after me. And I didn't have that experience. So I don't know if that's really Skarsgård's performance or if that was on the film direction and it falls on their shoulders. But that element was missing. And that's what's hurt the score for me, is that I should have been scared. Mm-hmm. There was that element that was there that I'm terrified of.
That's my only problem with his performance. And it's not his performance. Like, Skarsgård, I thought, was really good. That scene in the scene in the sewer, even though he plays it different than I think it was written or that Curry played it, he played it really well. And they don't use any tricks in it. They don't use any quick cuts. They don't use any quick movements. It's all just straightly his face and Georgie's face. And I think it works great because they're not throwing production, generic production stuff in it. that's when his performance is best to me, is when he's not doing anything added. There's no added movement or jump cuts.
It's just so eerie when that happens.
So his performance, very good. I didn't like some of the production choices.
Like when he came running, rushing at the camera.
Yes, exactly. Like
faster.
Yeah.
Man, that was creepy as hell to me, though.
Ugh. It was a little eerie, but it wasn't scary. And like it happened, and at the end of it happening, I was kind of like, oh, okay. Like it started to get intense at the beginning of it, but it fell flat really fast for me. Mm. But even the scene when they're down,
I just kept saying, let his performance play. He's doing some really interesting things, some really clever things. Let his performance play. And so sometimes they did, and it wouldn't work great. And sometimes they didn't, and it didn't work as great to me.
There was a scene where Georgie's in the basement, and the basement's flooded with water. Mm-hmm. And what's-his-face goes downstairs to see his brother. Yeah, that guy. And the whole thing focuses on Georgie. And his, what is he? I don't even remember what he's saying.
You'll flow too.
He continuously just like on a, mm-hmm. But then you have Pennywise there, and it was like so, like that should have been creepier than it really was, because he should have been able to kind of rise up slowly like he did, but actually scare us because we were so focused on Georgie. That element should have just been like, holy shit, he's there. And it was just kind of like, oh, he's there.
They the filmed it a little generic. A little bit.
Yeah. I could point him out. Hey, he's right there. He's right there in the bubbles. So that's my biggest complaint. But like I said, I don't necessarily know that it's Skarsgård's performance that really causes that issue.
I think he did really well. Yeah. Everything he did, I don't have a problem with.
Before you move on, I want to mention one other thing, that a scene with him that I absolutely loved. It might be my favorite shot of the movie with Pennywise, was when he came out of the refrigerator. Mm. All twisty and all that. That was such a creepy, don't even know why it's happening, but it was still awesome moments for the movie for me. So I love that.
When he came out and he just kept twisting and kept contorting.
Yep.
And like, I couldn't tell, because I know he worked for the contortionist for the movie. So
really?
He did. This guy took it seriously, man. I think there's actually some debate if he would even return for the sequel, because he kind of got too in character.
Oh, God.
He went a little bit Daniel Day-Lewis with it. I don't think he chased any kids around or anything, but he was just in his head. But
we're going to have another Joker under
I know. That's what I was thinking, too.
Don't have one of those moments. But when he comes out of there, I couldn't tell if it's CGI or him. And that's a testament to that performance. Mm-hmm. I really think it was him. I mean, I just think he contorted his body so that he could do that. And you're right, Scott. That creeped me out.
Really did. But the face always stayed the same.
Yes.
Upright.
And he didn't blink. That was really cool to me. I kept looking for it too. Because I've seen that the one clip where he's in the sewer so many times and he doesn't blink. I'm like, does he do like the whole movie like that? Because that's insane. I didn't see him blink. I didn't see it myself at all once during the whole movie.
Somebody get this man some eye drops.
Yeah, I'm just like, man, that's commitment, because that's not comfortable. I can't imagine. And I heard that the kids didn't see him in full makeup until the first scene that they filmed with him.
I want to see that like moment, the raw footage of that.
Of the kids crying and peeing all over the floor. Yeah. So what would you guys say? Is this more a horror movie or a thriller? And were you ever scared?
Yeah, I've kind of gone over it. It really didn't scare me. Like I said, I'm probably not the most fair person to answer this question. I think in terms of, is it horror or thriller, it really depends on what you define as a horror film. Some people only consider it a horror film if there's mass amounts of blood and gore, or if you actually experience a scare yourself. I don't necessarily see it that way, so I would still consider this a horror, but it has much more suspenseful thriller elements in it for me personally. Mm-hmm. It's just not a super scary horror film. That's to me, and it's hard to do it, so it's not fair. It might scare other people. But to me, it had a lot of heavy thriller, suspenseful elements, but it's still a horror film. Mm-hmm. The intent of it is to make you feel uncomfortable. And there were plenty of times where I felt a little uncomfortable. I was like, no, I don't want that happening to me. I'm not going in the basement. I'm not taking care of any of this. Mm-mm. Get me the hell away from that fridge. All of those situations. No. So to me, that's still part of a horror film. So it really just kind of depends on your own interpretation of that.
Well, I agree with you. Nothing drives me crazier than the condescending, oh, that wasn't a scary movie. We talked about that earlier. I hate that. And to me, a movie does not have to be gory or even scary to be considered horror. It needs to be unsettling. It needs to be off-putting. It needs to make you feel uncomfortable. This movie does that. So to me, it falls in the horror category. That's just how I feel. I'm not going to be one of those that is going to claim that I wasn't freaked out. No, I wasn't. I didn't feel uncomfortable like I did when I saw The Ring the first time in that final scene, or when I was a kid and I saw Ghostbusters and I was legitimately scared and freaked out. I should have put that in my thing earlier, man. I couldn't go to a library for a long time after seeing that opening scene.
I couldn't go to a library.
I know, that's like a comedy, right? That movie is like a comedy. It's not even supposed to be really scary. That librarian with it turned into like a claymation thing scarred me as a kid. And I used to like picture the card catalogs, which kids nowadays don't even know what those are, like flipping out. Oh, yeah. Anyway. So yeah, to me, that's totally a horror movie. That's what horror is it puts you in a different mind frame in terms of comfort level.
Yeah.
A thriller just gets your heart pumping in different levels. So you agree?
I'm really tired of the connotation, I guess, that horror movies have to scare you. I'm really tired of that, because I'll tell you what, most horror movies don't. And it's not because they might not have scary elements. I've seen so many of them, it's really hard to actually scare me. So I don't really, and it's not a smug, like, I just, you know, it didn't scare me. It's not that attitude. It's just when you see something done so many times in so many different ways, it's really hard to scare someone who's seen so many movies. It's not a fault on the filmmakers. I'm sure plenty of people were terrified. Me personally, I don't consider scaring me necessarily a horror movie. If I feel fear for the characters, if I feel tension for the characters, if I'm legitimately concerned for their well-being, that is a horror movie to me. And that's what it is. There are many moments where I even know exactly who's gonna die and who's gonna, you know, live and everything else. And I still was on the edge of my seat. You know, when they're in the house and you've got whichever kid it was that was trapped in the clown room. Was that Richie? I don't remember which kid it was. No, it Eddie? Stan? I don't remember which one it was. Whichever kid it was that was trapped in the clown room. That was a legitimately creepy scene to me. Like, I was fearful for them. I think it was Eddie. It was Eddie that was trapped in there. And then you have the continuing scene with Bill and Richie that had me worried for those characters. I mean, it was really well done and really creative. In the well, when you've got, was it Henry and Mike were having their little battle? That's not in the book that I recall, because I think Henry's actually makes it to adulthood. Henry Bowers. So that was a new scene, and that was really tense to me. And the end battle, I thought, was handled very well, and that's kind of different. So, I mean, there's enough different that made it unique even to book lovers, and there's enough in there that makes it a horror movie, because I was scared for people many, many times. And the father and Bev scene, I thought that was scary as hell.
Yeah, I was like, don't do this, don't do this. This is not going to go well. As soon as he came on screen with her, like their first screen together, or first scene together, I was like, oh God, this is going to be so bad. It's going to be so bad. Please don't let it go this way. And then sure as shit, it ended up going that way. I was like, God damn it. But it puts you on the edge of your seat a little bit, because you have those feelings of no. And I feel like that's part of what horror films are, is you put yourself in those positions and you're either concerned or you're fearful or anxious or something. But it creates a different type of feeling. Kind of, I associate it to like a roller coaster. That's where I get my adrenaline from, because I'm sure as shit not going on a roller coaster. But I will sit and watch a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I kind of – it's just that adrenaline rush sort of thing. And it doesn't necessarily need to make you jump out of your seat or screech or anything like that. There's plenty of classic horror films that do not do that, you know, back then or even now. And that doesn't make them any less a horror film.
And regardless, it's all entertaining. Mm-hmm. The whole movie's entertaining. Horror, comedy. This is so much funnier than I thought any movie like it.
Well, that was going to be my next point. Why do we got to put labels on it? It was an enjoyable movie.
Yeah, it's good. That's perfect.
Regardless of what genre it is.
My grandfather thinks this town is cursed. He says that all the bad things that happen in this town are because of one thing, an evil thing that feeds off the people of Derry.
But it can't be one thing. We all saw something different.
Maybe. Or maybe it knows what scares us most, and that's what we see.
I saw a leper. He was like a walking infection.
But you didn't. Because it isn't real. None of this is. None of this makes any sense. They're all like bad dreams.
I don't think so. I know the difference between a bad dream and real life, okay? We're all afraid of something.
Got that right. Hi, Rich. What are you afraid of? Clones.
Okay, so best and worst moments in or about the film. Scotty?
My favorite moment, even outside of Pennywise, was that guy in the painting, man. I think that thing creeped me out more than Pennywise did, honestly. Except for maybe the refrigerator scene that we mentioned earlier. The way that thing moved, it looked like always like a painting, so it always had this like two-dimensional feel to it, but the rest of the body was three-dimensional. I don't know. And then that scene in the sewer when they're actually like he's got his whole mouth on the one kid. I was like, what's going on right now?
And then when it like contorts itself into the drain and starts to go away and has this super eerie expression of like, I'll come back for you.
Yeah.
That was like, ugh, okay, no.
That was my favorite horrific thing outside of the one scene with Pennywise was just – I actually found him overall more scary than Pennywise, maybe because we saw him less. Who knows? But – as far as the worst, maybe the pacing, but I also felt a tiny bit frustrated with some of the decisions these kids made. It wasn't quite Alien Covenant level, but like what kids are gonna do that seriously?
Which one? Like pick one.
Just like what's his name? Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's the main one, so to speak. I'm gonna go in this house by myself.
I would not. People keep saying that, and I'm like, I would. I'd be the first one at that age to run in that house. Like, nah, come on, fucker. That's exactly what I would have been at that. Nah, is it stupid? Yes. But I would have done it.
Mm.
Maybe not Scott Clark, but Aaron Pearson would have.
It's one thing to walk into it and just, hey, I dare you to go into that abandoned house, and you know, blah, blah. There's nothing going to happen. There's nobody living in there. There's nothing happened. They've got physical evidence of this thing is there.
But it killed his brother, though. It killed his brother, though.
Hell yeah.
That's family.
Family. Drink a Corona, kid.
Yeah, drink a Corona. Get your ass in there. Man up. Drop him. Let's go.
Where it go?
That's good. Were there any other ones like that? Like, maybe that's the only one I'm thinking of. Like, because I've heard a couple people say that. I'm trying to think of other moments where they did stuff that I thought was just...
I don't know. Is a 15-year-old girl going to go with a group of four or five guys and just strip down to her underwear and jump in the water with them? I don't know. I've never been a 15-year-old girl, so that seemed kind of like, really?
Not when I was 15, unfortunately. I would have.
They dress – okay, how she's dressing in the 80s, granted it might not have happened like for an 80s time period, but like now, that's how they dress on – like going to the mall or going to school or something like that. That's just how they dress is half naked. So absolutely, I could see that happening because
That's why there's so many babies now.
Right.
So many babies. Jean shorts will bring babies out. my favorite scenes, actually, the boys all staring at Bev at the quarry. I love that moment where she's just sitting there with her eyes closed. They're all staring at her, gawking. And then all of a sudden, you know, she looks over and every one of them is like looking a different way. I love that moment. That was great. A couple lines that really got me. It's a gazebo, mom. It's bullshit. I was almost in tears. I just talked about the mullet one. Do you have to be a virgin to see this clown?
What was the word supposed to be?
What's that?
What was it supposed to be? He said gazebo, but it was supposed to be placebo.
Placebo.
It's a gazebo, mom. He said it with such conviction.
It's a gazebo, mom. It's bullshit. Oh, so funny. Oh, I love when Richie's like, do you need a kiss from me too, mom? Pretty funny. My favorite line in the whole movie was, you punched me, made me walk through shitty water, dragged me through a crack house, and now I'm going to have to kill this fucking clown. I loved that. Richie's my boy. My boy, Blue. I love him. Worse though, I thought Pennywise's last line where he just says fear and falls down the well was a little cheesy, a little on the nose, but that's just my opinion.
I'm kind of on par with you there. The dialogue in general from the Losers Clubs was actually my favorite part of the whole movie in general. Just constant comedic dialogue between the characters.
And real friends.
Yes. That wasn't cheesy, though. Pulling that off and making it not cheesy in a horror film is extremely rare and super impressive to me. Because every time you see a horror film try to incorporate a lot of comedy, it gets so sour so fast. But it doesn't happen in this film. It just continues to make me laugh and stay engaged in the film and still anxious of what's to come. However, I also agree with you on the ending, because I wish that it would have been a little bit stronger. And just more, like, I wish there was just a scene towards the end that was kind of just all-encompassing of everything from this, from the story. Mm-hmm. That really just grabbed you and took you by hold, and you were like, wow. But you didn't really get that at the end. You had those experiences here and there during the duration of the film, but not at the end where I felt like they could have had it the most. So it just kind of got, it was just kind of meh. For an ending.
Yeah. And people are, do those kids survive that were floating? No, they're already dead. They're so dead.
Yeah. They're coming down because they're angels now.
Jeez. I actually had somebody ask me, well, the kids all survive. What? What movie did you watch? One of them lost an arm.
In the first like 10, 15 minutes.
You think he just found his arm?
Oh. Speaking of, how perfect was it that the kid is chasing that boat at the very beginning and just like knocks his head right into that barrier or whatever? That was a tiny little thing that I just worked for me for some reason, because he just totally like just biffed it, gets up, and I don't know. I love that.
Oh, Rock Fight. Rock Fight was cool too. Rock Fight was cool. There's a cool little anecdote that Troy Heinrichs actually told me that I didn't pick up on right away. It's at the very end of the movie. I'm not going to say why it's important, but if you ever read the book, if you have read the book, the order in which they leave at the end of the movie, actually that order matters in the next movie, but I can't tell you why, because I don't want to spoil what's coming in the second
Interesting.
Movie.
Interesting.
But the order she has sex with them.
The order of the orgy for the next movie?
It could be. Oh, God. Don't do that. Please don't have that. Please don't have
what
that.
What if it's an orgy?
An orgy?
An orgy.
Do they have flowers there?
I was thinking like orange or something. Oh. What if they have an orgy with them all as adults? An adult Bev?
Depends on who they cast for her. Speaking of, the second film is going to focus on the adult. Nice segue. On the adult versions of the Losers Club as they again are forced to confront it 27 years later. What do you guys want to see from the second film? And do you have any casting ideas that spring to mind?
I would love it if they were to wait. Nobody's going to agree with me. If they were to wait another 27 years.
What?
So then they can reach.
I die in a tragic tripping accident. No.
Tripping accident?
Yeah, me running and tripping. Yes.
Oh.
I just think it would be really cool for them to kind of reintroduce it with a whole new generation of audience. But with the same cast members, like the same kids who played in this movie.
That's a lot of preparation.
I know. But then did it as adults. You'd also have to make sure they all live somehow, like no diseases, no car accidents, all mm-hmm. that too.
Well, to pull that off, they wouldn't actually have to wait a full 27 years. They can just wait until they're actually adults, and then they can do some things with makeup.
There you go.
I don't want it anyway, but go ahead.
Well, anyway, I know it's never going to happen, but that would be really cool. Kind of like a Boyhood thing, if you guys remember that movie.
Yeah, I get what you're going for, but 27 years is quite a stretch there, lady.
So I hope to see more context brought in of the evil, the presence of the evil, not necessarily it being Pennywise, it just being an evil thing mm-hmm. that can kill you and take care of you in terms of that. But my suggestion of somebody who I think would be really interesting would be Lily Collins as Bev. I know she's not as like old. 80s and dreamy and all of that. No, I'm just the character, like with the red hair and the beautiful blue eyes and all of that. Lily Collins, she's beautiful, but in a different way. I think she would be really interesting. Also, we talked about Dylan O'Brien earlier. Mm-hmm. I think he would be really interesting to be cast in that movie.
He looks like he's 22 years old. He'd have to be 40.
Well, just give it a few more years, like we talked about makeup.
Oh, Lord have mercy. All right.
Have you seen him, his transition from like the last 5 years?
A grizzled veteran now, yeah.
Between Teen Wolf and this new movie that he's
broke his back or something. Poor kid's been through hell. I don't blame him. All right, anything else?
No, that's kind of just what I want to see.
Scotty, what about you?
I've only got one, and it's probably because I'm so enamored with Sophia Lillis, but Jessica Chastain. Mm-hmm. As her in the future would be great.
Okay. I would definitely want to see in the second movie a better explanation, because I don't think they explained it at all. I mean,
well, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't really explain it. They didn't explain the turtle either, which they probably won't. But Google it if you want to know. The turtle's kind of interesting. But I don't know if they're ever going to really explain it in detail, but I would like a better explanation, because nobody I've talked to knows really what it is. And I think that's important, at least for the second movie.
So I have a question.
Let me mention my suggestion.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Richie, Ryan Reynolds is first person comes to mind. Funny and dramatic. Amy Adams for Bev.
Mm.
And Jake Gyllenhaal for Bill.
Yes. Sold on this.
Oh, it's your question.
Okay, so obviously the evil, it can manifest your fears. But how – it doesn't really talk about how it's able to control you and convince you to do things that mm-hmm. you wouldn't otherwise do.
Like how it convinced him to kill his dad?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking about.
It uses your fears against you.
But, I mean, nobody else is really taking action. The action is taken onto them. So why in that one situation – it could have had them killing each other this whole time.
Because it feeds on fear, and as soon as his dad – terrorized him, he was terrified and it could feel it. So it, you know, jumped to putting the knife in a mailbox and seeing what it
could
do. But
then he got rid of the fear, because now he's no longer scared of his dad. He just killed him. He's gone. That fear is wiped away.
He's still scared. He's just scared in general. And
he's still a kid.
His mind snapped.
I know, but it just was like very strange that was the only situation where it convinced one of the kids to do something.
There's more. And, well, again, with the book, it's only fair to really compare the movie. And you're right. They didn't really do a very good job of explaining that.
It was the only instance that I can think of where it was convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Unless
everything else, it was done to them. You're right.
Right. Because if it had the power to convince, then Georgie getting the boat could have just been it convincing him to get the boat.
You're right. Yeah.
So where's my damn explanation?
His eyes did change. So, I mean, maybe that means I got you, bitch. I got you.
Let me ask you this, because I'm curious about what the second film is going to look like in terms of tone. Because in the original book, in the original movie, it was, like you said, 50s and 60s, and then it was like 70s and 80s, right? In terms of
it was late 50s or early 1960, something like that. And then it was like the end of the 80s. Yeah.
Right. So now we're looking at this one takes place in the mid 80s. So now you're looking at having the second movie take place in the late 2000s, early 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that tone? Because it's no longer nostalgic. I mean, it's going to feel much more
modern day. Yeah. Yep.
So
that's what it should be.
But it won't be modern day. It'll still be.
I think they'll still have flashbacks to the kids, though. I think they've already said that. The director Andy Muschietti had said that there's going to be some flashbacks.
So how old are these? I was thinking that they were going to be like late 20s, early 30s. So it's not sounding
40.
Like 40.
40. 27 years.
She's 15, right? They're all like 12 to 15 years old, aren't they?
Yeah. So around 40. Yep, 27 years.
I don't know why I thought they were.
It was like late 50s, and it was like 85 or something like that in the book.
Carry the one, Amanda.
No, I know. I just thought that the kids were younger than that, I guess. Well, much younger. Yeah. Like, I thought it would be closer to like 30s, not 40s.
Well, it wasn't.
Like, they should all have their own houses by now and have these.
Yeah, let's have a movie about mortgages. I'm terrified of my mortgage, Pennywise. I'm not afraid of you anymore. I'm terrified of paying my bill.
That's what my thing is. When you have children, that they're more fearful of a lot of different things. Adults are more scared of just...
In 2010, Pennywise is like the mascot for the bank where everybody gets their mortgage exactly. from. He does like commercials on TV. That's
He's
what
a
I
dentist.
God. Oh, the dentist?
Yes. God damn it, I don't want another cavity.
Oh, boy. All right, well, we got to wrap this up. Parting thoughts on the film, book, legacy of King's work, anything, Scotty?
I'm just excited to see more of King stuff for the first time in a long time. I mean, we got this right on the heels of The Dark Tower, which I liked quite a bit as well. Man, I can't speak to it because we haven't seen it wrapped up. But one of my biggest complaints with these movies is that they never end in a satisfying fashion. I was satisfied with Dark Tower. I was satisfied with the end of this chapter of it. Bring back some of the other ones, man. Bring back Storm of the Century and somebody rewrite that ending to be a little bit more satisfying. Tommyknockers.
Langoliers.
The Stand. I mean, like, let's go back and do some of these because this seems to be becoming a thing, and I would like to see some rehashes of these and have them done right with now that we got a couple of good ones under our belt.
I'm happy people have finally found a film of Stephen King's novels that they really enjoy and that seems to be doing well, because he's had success in some, you know, with some of the other films based off of his novels, but they haven't been raved about to the same extent. I feel like it has already gotten and the attention it's gotten. So I'm happy people, even like the people who were most fearful of going into it, were still accepting and really enjoyed this film. And I'm excited to see what they can do going forward. And kind of like Scott saying, are we going to get more of these types of films? I think that would be pretty cool.
I really hope the success of it like spurs people to read a book. It's really like a big thing. I think we live in a culture that loves shortcuts. I mean, I get it. We're all busy. We're all doing stuff. We got lives. But it is one of those books I think you need to immerse yourself in. And if you really love this movie or you like this movie a lot, I think it's a good, if you've never read his work, it's a good book to get into, because it's not Dark Tower where it's a lot of weirdness and stuff you can't really branch onto. It really will grip you as a reader. And don't listen to it, read it. I really think people should immerse themselves. It's one of those books where I think people should take time for yourself and see the scope of what Stephen King is about and what he can do, because some of his work is fantastic, and this is one of them. So I would like that people would check out his books and read them.
Anybody got time for that?
Obviously, you got time for that. All right, well, that's going to do for this episode. I know it's a long one, but hey, what are you going to do? Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're also on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. You can find other episodes and reviews and other info at TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Our email, if you want to send us a letter or anything, is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Remember to grab the Ho and the Go with our Apple or Android apps. We're also on Spotify, or subscribe in whatever you use. And please review us on that podcast app of choice. It really does help the show. And remember to go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider if you want to sign up, support the show, and get some bonus content. Thank you, Amanda, for being here.
Thank you for having me. Are we all going to float?
Nah. Did you write that down? Make sure you're sitting there. And Scotty, thanks for being here. Anything you want to plug?
Thanks for having me. As always, you can also check out my other podcast called The Gaming Outsider, which can be found at the same place as you listen to this show. We actually offer a guest every week, 3 weeks out of the month anyway, from our community to come on and join us on the episode. So if you'd like to talk about video games, give us a listen and shoot me an email, scott@thegamingoutsider.com.
Or you could go to scottclark@thehollywoodoutsider.com, but whatever.
That too.
You son of a bitch. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode. You can also remake this movie, right? We just had a Hellboy episode, 9 to 5 episode, which Amanda, you were on that.
9 to 5. That was great.
So check that out. That's remakethismovieright.com, or we're on your podcast app of choice. And I also was on the Projection Booth, which is a podcast dedicated to the history of movies. And we talked about The Running Man, if you want to go find me over there. And of course, The Blacklist Exposed. The Blacklist is coming back to TV, and I'll be doing that with Mr. Troy Heinrichs.
The Academy Award-winning podcast,
The Blacklist Exposed. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thanks for listening to this really long, but I thought great episode. I had a lot of fun.
I think it's good.
I think
it's
same good. Here.
All right.
Woo-hoo. I guess we'll see from the downloads.
That's true. Keep an eye on it. Remember, the next time you head to the theater to see It, buy popcorn. Or I'm sorry.
No.
Too dramatic?
Too, yeah. You know, try again.
You're not invited back. All right, take care, guys.
See you in 2 weeks.
Bye. The fool!
What the fuck is happening?